When I'm Penny and I am an alcoholic, my Fitbit is just going, oh, I got fireworks here. I must have reached a goal. Right? That's what we're all about, reaching our goals. Step four is a lot like that. Very good segue, right? All right. Wow. Step four, made a surgeon and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So I was just going to read a little bit on page 63 of the big book. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. I was thinking a little bit about last week. Actually, I thought about it when Kevin said all those CDs are there. Step three was a very personal expose, if you will, on my relationship with turning my life over to my higher power. I didn't find that with step four. It's pretty cut and dry in my eyes. I don't know if others feel that way, but so I just feel like I'm getting into it, right? Booze is a symptom of the problem. That's what I just got done reading. So even though I had stopped drinking, I still have shortcomings that keep me separated from my higher power. And if I don't address that, I will either drink or worse, I think, become a dry drunk. I don't know if that's a new term for folks. I know we had a couple of people newer to this meeting. I don't know how new you are to the program, but a dry drunk, I've bumped up against a few of those, and it's not pleasant. I think I'd rather just go to the bitter end with alcohol in my system than not to have this program of recovery that has afforded me so much more than just not drinking. Because not drinking, drinking was not the problem. The problem was me. So I embarked upon taking an inventory of my life to review both my assets and my liabilities. Just like a business takes an inventory, it is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. So, liabilities. I just pretty much listed them, and I'm going to share examples that I can share from the podium of the liabilities. And again, I like to put that into the context that all my liabilities today, not so much probably when I started out on this journey, but definitely today, are things that can block me from my higher power. Resentment. So being angry or bitter toward a person or institution over an extended period of time. I think that's a very good description of a resentment. Some people I've heard describe it as re-feeling the same thing over and over again. It can be a hostile or indignant attitude. I have a tendency to maybe have a little bit of that going on. I never thought about that being a resentment, but yeah, I can get an attitude once in a while. And it's interesting that the big book tells us that is the number one offender, and I totally get that. And there was another reading I'd like to share with you on the bottom of page 64 of the big book. Page 64, yes, a little bit about number one offender. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. And it goes on to say that in most cases it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, and our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. And then on the bottom of 66, it is plain. It is plain. Oh, good thing I put down which paragraph. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentments is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again, and with us to drink is to die. But those are strong words, I found. And, some examples about some of my resentment towards people today. It's hard to go back to, like, I was angry at everyone and everything when I first got, so my resentment list, I had no problem creating that thing. But today, I guess it's the thought. I have thoughts like, somebody didn't do something for me, perform for me, didn't provide for me. The thought that I deserve, that's a key indicator. When I have certain key words that when they pop up, it's like, oh, there you go again. You're working on a little resentment. The institutions. Sometimes I think that's confusing to new. Well, what's an institution? Like the bank. I remember early on that it was on my resentment list that I was angry at the bank, because how dare they charge me for a bounced check? That bank, the grocery store, like waiting too long in the line. My supervisor for, speaking to me about my drinking. My parents for asking about where I'd been because they hadn't seen me for 2 days. They didn't know if I was dead or alive. All of these things, was me being angry at somebody else because I was not in the right way. I was doing things that placed myself in a position to be harmed, and I was harming others in addition to that. So, fear. So a brief definition is being afraid of losing something we have or not getting something we want. That encompasses a whole bunch of areas for me, because sometimes, when I first thought of fear, it's like, I'm not afraid of anything. But when I put it into that context, I had much fear in my life. And it can go to the extreme. I've never really had these extreme instances of fear, which is a phobia or a terror, a panic. But I have had like anxiety and worry, especially worry. And those are just, to me, different masks for fear. And, when I was drinking, I was worried about my job and my stuff and my reputation because of my unsavory actions the night before and the consequences of my drinking. Well, when I stopped drinking, those things, those fears all went away because I wasn't doing those things anymore. So, that's what I love about the 12 steps is the fact that it's a never-ending journey here. I don't just magically do the 4-step one time and then I get on with my life and everything's wonderful. No, we 10, 11, and 12. Again, those fears that I had kind of morphed into these worries. And today, just to be honest, I still have, I don't know if I'm going to call it, I'm just going to call it a fear. That's what we're talking about, right? Financial insecurity, a fear of the future, like what if one of us loses our job, silly things like meeting a deadline, that will cause at work, it will cause an anxiety within me, and it gets me kind of wound up a little bit. So, you know, again, there's always an opportunity to examine these liabilities because they interfere with my relationship with God, mostly in that I'm not relying upon God in those moments. I'm relying upon my self-will. Selfishness and self-centeredness, super yuck on that one. Quite honestly, I couldn't even mouth those words that I was a selfish person. I mean, it was well into recovery. I despised that so much in others, and I came to realize it was because it was within me. And I could point it out in somebody else, but I could kind of butter it up and make it look different for myself. So what is that? What is selfishness? Well, it's a concern for only myself, my welfare or pleasure without regard for others at their expense. And I thought, oh, that's a nice twist. I Googled this, you know, definition. You know, pleasure without regard for others at their expense. And that kind of stuck with me a little bit because, you know, sometimes somebody's calling and I'm watching a TV program, and instead of pressing the green button, I press the red one, right? And, you know, maybe something around the house. I would just love to have my bathroom finished that was started, I won't tell you how many months ago. It's like, so I start harping on that special person in my life, like, when is this going to get done? And I have my own list. I have plenty to be working on myself. But that's what I do, is I want that now. I'll get this. I want this taken care of right even at work. You know, like, how long are they going to make me wait before they get my stuff done? I've been very, like, this is all in my head, right? And I don't say anything, but I'm developing this attitude, and it's all selfish and self-centeredness. And here's another thing I never thought. It's like, well, what's the difference between selfishness and self-centeredness? So selfishness is about actions, grabbing all I can get, feelings of it's not fair. Like I mentioned, that's one of my favorites. However, self-centered is about thought. So trying to get a discussion turned around to me, interrupting or ignoring others or wanting attention. That was so helpful to me because, you know, I say a lot of times I'm self-centered, but I'm definitely leaning, not that I don't have those tendencies, I definitely lean towards selfishness. You know, I wasn't like chomping at the bit to stand up here because look how, you know, that's just not who I'm about. So hopefully that will be helpful if any of you are embarking upon your fourth step and you have questions about these key words that are in the directions, which I've always kind of used the big book. Dishonesty, theft or deception involves taking what is not mine, cheating, lying, or withholding the truth. Well, I had a lot of that. I did a little thievery in my teenage years. I got caught in a grocery store. I was like, I don't know, 14. And they took me back to the little office. Now, this is a lot of years ago, right? I was petrified. They didn't call my parents. They told me never to. Now, this is a small town, and there's one grocery store, and I was in there stealing, and never come back in here. Like, what am I supposed to do, you know? I think they kind of figured out that I never stole a thing after that. You know, I don't even know why I was doing it. Well, I know why I was doing it, but it wasn't out of need, that's for sure. So, you know, when I first got sober, we talk about cash register honesty. You know, it was real easy for me to stop taking things. You know, there was a phase where I was stealing people's money at school. I mean, just the thought of that is mind-boggling to me. But yeah, I would take whatever I wanted. I had no conscience in that regard. You know, the cheating, lying, and withholding the truth, that was a little bit more of an issue that stayed with me. You know, we've heard many times people talking about the lying. I think about how much I lied to my parents when I was a teenager. I mean, just bold, in their face, I smell alcohol on you, I smell cigarettes. No, you don't. No, you don't. I'm just going to say it. No, you don't. Wow. So when I got sober, you know, I'm in my early 20s and I'm starting to work this fourth step, and I'm looking at, well, how have I been dishonest, you know, as an adult? And, you know, it came down to, you know, any time I would take a pencil or a sticky pad from work, that was stealing. Every time I went into work and I was hungover and pretty much, you know, slept it off on the couch, I was stealing from my employer. Anytime I would lie to people or withhold the truth, I mean, not that, what do you think of this dress, not that type of truth, but, you know, out and out lying, it was being dishonest. You know, why did I do those things? And mostly it was because of my selfishness. I was trying to get everything that I wanted, or I didn't want people to think badly of me. I wanted them to think of me in a certain way, and so if I would tell a lie so that you wouldn't think what I was thinking you were thinking of me, somehow it was valid. It was okay, because I really wasn't that kind of person, even though I really was that kind of person. So, page 2. Oh, I'm doing good. I found out that I need 3 pages in order to get a half an hour of content here. False pride. Feeling less than or better than someone else. Feeling superior because of race or education, religion, and sarcasm. Oh, dang. Feeling inferior is really an excessive concern about our own troubles. This includes self-pity, low self-esteem, and lack of respect. And luckily, that was shared with me, and you kind of hear about that in the rooms as you're, you know, first getting sober. What is it? Inferiority complex. What is it? Ego? How does that go? Yes, that's it. So yeah, we're a mixed bag, right? We can just go from one extreme to the other. And, you know, because pride, you know, I thought of ego. I think of pride as ego, and it really is not that. It can be, but it's so much more. And all of these liabilities, which is, you know, character defects, I think it's important that we delve in and understand and look these words up in the dictionary to really get a sense for what am I digging for here? What is it that, you know, these things that would crop up and I would drink over them? So some examples. Feeling better than some other alcoholics because my drinking had not progressed as bad as. So, you know, thinking that somebody who looks like an alcoholic, like I didn't think I looked like an alcoholic, or that because of the things that I still possessed, a car, a home, a job, that somehow I was better than. That was a sense of false pride. Feeling better than because I was not as poor as some, instead of feeling compassion. You know, the opposite of that is when I'm feeling better than someone else, I'm incapable of, you know, I'm judging. I'm incapable of doing any action to help that person. And then feeling inferior because of my actions when faced with myself in the morning light. You know, then we're wallowing in self-pity and what a terrible person I am, and I should just whatever, you know. I wish I would just come up, you know, not be on the face of the earth. Jealousy. So the definition I found for that is being suspicious of another's motives, and it produces feelings of abandonment to rage and humiliation. So, you know, sometimes work, You know, Eric always cracks me up. He says, work's not all it's cracked up to be, or work is work, you know. Well, for me, you know, I derive, if I want to be there that much and for this long, I want it to be a positive experience as much as possible. So a lot of my examples today, a lot of my struggles, if you will, have to do with examining these liabilities in the workplace. And one of them, a jealousy, is not wanting a coworker to get an advancement because I don't like her. And I think I have valid reasons, but she's spiritually sick. Another thing is not getting recognized, and not again because I want accolades, but I, you know, when you work hard, you expect something sometimes. And if it goes on for years, it can kind of, you know, bring me down a little bit. Being suspicious or reactive to a person's good news is a form of jealousy. You know, it's like, oh, what? You lost 20 pounds? What? You won the lottery? What? You got a new car? You know, whatever. So those are things very fleeting for me, because then I can turn it around. But again, whenever those things arise in me, today, I can quickly say, oh, there you go again. You know, where's your gratitude list? And I don't like it. I don't like being there today. I used to live in that stuff, and that is why we have to get rid of it. At least I had to get rid of it, because those were all great reasons to have a drink. Envy, because sometimes jealousy and envy can get a little bit confused, is wanting someone else's things. I love these simple descriptions. So an example of that would be me talking badly about someone because of their success, or grouping all successful people together and judging them. All those rich people, you know, they're just pushing us little people down. You know, that type of talk, you know, and I need to be mindful of that. Well, here's one I can pretty much safely say I didn't experience too awful much, and that's laziness, because I used my busybody way to the extreme. I wasn't a human being, I was a human doing, and I still struggle with that. But laziness is nothing more than an unwilling to work or use energy. So this includes procrastination. So I do have a little bit of that here and there. A lifestyle for some and a temptation for all of us. So I'm definitely tempted at times to be lazy. One example I have is, I kind of shared that example, is, you know, when there's too many of my tasks to worry about, I don't want to do another load of laundry, another sink of dishes, or whatever. Well, let's find the honeydew list. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the honeydew. So I have a honey. His name's Eric, and I've made him a list. And I put it on the fridge. And so when I don't want to do my stuff, I'll just have my honey do the list for me, right? So that is a form of laziness. You know, I need to go and do my stuff, and then I won't have time to be thinking about that list. So, the other part of this inventory is assets. And, you know, I saw that word, I bolded it when I was reading I embarked upon taking an inventory of my life to review both my assets and liabilities. I stink at that. So this has been very helpful to me, because, and I'll get into this a little bit later, but I really don't recall naming my assets during my first four step. I did have a sponsor, though, try to extract this information from me during my fifth step. So good sponsor, right? So doing this, preparing for tonight, I realized that I have also fallen short in doing that in my own fist steps with my own ladies. So it's something I need to kind of bring to the forefront and be mindful, because I got two fist steps coming up here in the next couple months. So assets to me are the result of turning my will and my life over to God and working the 12 steps. So when I look at assets, I'm not looking at like, oh, you do so great in this area. No, I guess I look at it as a scale. Here's my liabilities, and the opposite of that is my asset. And somewhere I'm on that scale. And so for me, I don't feel like I have natural assets. And this is just me. I don't know how you all look at it or how the book really wants us to look at it. But I'm striving for the opposite of these liabilities. So some of the examples I have is, instead of resentment, it's forgiveness. So how forgiving am I? Is that an asset of mine? More so today than it was, 30 years ago, but it's still on a scale. Some people I'm willing to forgive pretty quick, and it's usually the people in these rooms. I'll forgive you in a heartbeat, right? But it's those people that are close in my life or have done harm to me in the past that I find that forgiveness is kind of a layering thing. It's like, I'll forgive you now, and then something will crop up 5 years from now. It's like, oh, I thought I forgave that person. Well, there's another layer of this forgiveness. Another asset would be faith. And that faith and love to me are the opposite of fear. And so for me to have faith that everything is going to work out means that I have less fear. So I'm, again, on that scale back and forth. Unselfishness would be an asset. And the less selfish I become, the more unselfishness I experience. Dishonesty is a liability, whereas honesty is an asset. It's the opposite of that. Pride, humility is my focus this year. For the last 4 years, I have chosen one word to focus on, because I am that slow. I need to really delve into things quite deeply in order to get the full essence of it. And this year's humility. So that is something I'm striving for. It's taken me a long time to realize that I have a lot of this false pride in me. I have a lot of pride that presents itself differently. Jealousy, the opposite of that, the asset, would be trust. And, for various reasons, I've had trust issues. Working the steps and finding out who I am, I'm able to come to terms with that. Envy, the opposite of that is contentment. Isn't that a great asset? I think about the gratitude list. How many times have we been told to do the gratitude list? So that is always a great way for me to realize you've got everything that you need, a lot of what you want, and good thing I didn't get what I deserved. So action instead of laziness. Surprise, surprise. All right, I gotta get going here. All right, my experience. So my experience, I recall spending only a few hours over a couple of weeks to do my four steps. So this is kind of going back to my first four step. And I don't really advocate, I don't sponsor where we do four steps. After you do your initial four step, then it's a 10th step. Sometimes it's a written 10th step. Sometimes we have to actually write it out, but it's kind of semantics, right? But that's what I mean, is that my first four step, I spent a few hours. I recall a few tears at the time, sitting at my kitchen table, kind of trying to come to terms with myself. I recall seeing myself as more involved in my circumstances, placing myself in a position to be harmed often. It tells us that, when I was working through the four step, it's like, oh my gosh, no wonder I had all of these liabilities because I kept putting myself in the jackpot. I was drunk, you know, and doing stupid things. What did I expect? And that was important for me, Kevin, because that instantly diminished this concept that God was punishing me. You know, that was a hard thing for me, that I wanted to step away from the punishing God. And not that that was really taught to me or anything, but that's how I felt. Like, you deserve that penny. You deserve to be this hungover. You deserve to have no money. You deserve whatever. No, I was doing that to myself, not God. So, in sponsorship and helping the new person work the steps, I have to remind them, just in case, it's not about writing down every incident where or shortcomings manifest themselves. Like, I don't want an autobiography. Like, I don't have, like, you know, an entire weekend to do a fist up. You know, it's about giving an example and acknowledging where the shortcomings are at. You know, and sometimes, you know, I always provide that direction. As far as instruction, I start out with resentments with my sponsees because I think everybody gets that. And they're the easiest, I think, to identify. And what I normally do is I have a sponsee, you know, write down their resentments in the left column, and then, you know, one, and then we look at, you know, what was their part, and then, you know, in the end, you know, what was the area that they felt as though was being infringed upon, you know, their natural instinct. And once they get the idea, pretty much it's like, okay, run with it, you know, and we'll check in during each segment. You know, I forgot, I'm going on and on. I'm not even going to get to all the other parts of the inventory. Oh, well. Anyways. I usually, when working with Kevin, this is your section about sponsorship. So I always have them give me a time frame, because it can go on for months and months and months, or it can be done like in 2 hours, which I think might be too quick. So I always ask my sponsees to give me a due date, and then I ask them who they're planning on doing their fist up with, because I could make the assumption that it's going to be me, but I think it's important, if it's not, that I would have the opportunity to make sure that they take their fist with someone that would be understanding. I kind of explain to them what the process is going to look like. Like, you're going to do this four step, and you're going to come over to my house, and we're going to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, and you need to have so many hours carved out for this process. I continue to pull all of the parts of the steps together, reminding them, you know, what do they call it, an arch through which we will step through, a free person or something. You know, I just keep reminding them, oh, you did step one, you did two, three, now we're at four. Just kind of keep reminding them that, you know, this is the process and you're doing it for real. Alright, well, I better shut up. Right? I'm just... Yay! I better shut up.
Are there any questions for Penny?
Yes, I'm still laughing.
Hi, Penny. I'm Laura. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Laura.
And would you go over the self-centered versus selfish again, please?
Oh, yes. So an example of selfishness is grabbing all I can get, feelings of like it's not fair, where self, and those are actions, you know, so maybe stealing or taking extra cookies or eating too much at the buffet, or, you know, it's kind of like you're acting out physically. Where self-centeredness is more about thought, whereas you're trying to get a discussion turned around to you. You know, somebody's telling a story about their vacation. Oh, I got one better than that. Interrupting, ignoring people, wanting attention. You know, somehow getting that conversation turned around to ourselves is more of a self-centered action as opposed to a selfishness.
Now you're in trouble. Bruce got you.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I guess I could have went on and on, right?
I guess I'm trying to.
Thanks, Penny. Bruce, alcoholic. The question that I came to my mind, you know, as I was reading the 12 and 12 here, says step four is but the beginning of a lifetime practice. Mm-hmm. Just wondering if you have an opinion on that one way or the other.
Oh, for sure. And again, I think that is encompassed in the 10th step, you know, reviewing my day. And, you know, if something's plaguing me, like that coworker, you know, it's written 10th step time. And if I'm being honest about things that are, you know, sponsors are great. I mean, I have one, and I appreciate her because it's like, you know, we've been talking about this for 4 months. I think it's time to write out a 10th step, which is, in essence, a 4th step. And there's something about practice, you know, writing it down, seeing it in black and white, working the columns, and coming to the conclusion like, oh my gosh, there I go again. The last one I did was this past winter, and I kept it in my purse because I can easily kind of slip back. So not that there's anything that would be there's no names on it, so for me I can do that, but it is a great reminder. So it's a valuable tool for me, instead of allowing that to continually spin around in my head, to get it out, to get it down, and to do the fifth step with my sponsor. So yes.
Hi Penny, I'm Lisa.
Hi Lisa.
I'm an alcoholic. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed your talk tonight. And I just wanted you to recap the false pride one for me, please.
Oh, the false pride. The definition of?
Well, different ones. Like one was feeling better or less than, one was superior.
Mm-hmm. So false pride is feeling less than or better than someone else, feeling superior because of race, education, religion, and then there's sarcasm, which is one of my favorite ways to be prideful. Feeling inferior is really an excessive concern about our own trouble. So, you know, that's that reverse side of things. You know, if I can't be the best at it, I'm going to be the worst. So, you know, that low self-esteem, lack of self-respect, self-pity, those I think are examples of feeling inferior. All of them, though, end up focusing on self in the end.
Mm-hmm. I found my board. So it's kind of like you're trying to strive that balance.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere between on that scale. You start about that scale from one extreme.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of like at peace with yourself if you find that balance.
I'm sorry, what?
Kind of at peace with yourself if you find that balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't like those feelings anymore. I lived in so much anger and resentment and ego and, you know, all of those liabilities. I was so filled with them, it just fueled my drinking. And I can't afford a drink today. That is not an option for me. So if I want more than balance. I want to go all the way over to the right. You know, I don't want any liabilities. I want all assets. And I know that's an impossibility. But if I don't keep striving for that, then I'm just a sorry person. I am not a nice person to be around. And I am not giving anything to anyone when I'm in those modes. So it's more of my spiritual well-being today is why I strive for those assets, not because I'm worried about having a drink. But if it goes far enough to the left, I'm going to drink. I'm pretty convinced of that.
Hi, Penny. My name's Mary Beth. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks again for a great talk. So you talked about time frame. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are about Well, exactly, with your experience, how long did it take you to do your fourth step? And then you mentioned something to your sponsees about a time frame for doing mm-hmm. every step. Could you mm-hmm. kind of go over those parameters?
Well, it depends. For me, it was over a couple weeks. I spent a few hours, and, you know, I got it done. I just banged it out. I think today when I'm working with someone, I take into account what their life is now. I was a single young person. I had no life. I worked, and I went to AA. That's all I had, because before that, I worked and I drank. So I had the time to invest into AA a lot. And so a lot of the women I sponsor today, they have children and they have homes and they have jobs, or if they're an IOP, they're trying to meet those commitments. You know, it depends. And so I definitely don't stretch it out past 3 months. And you know, usually I try to ask them to turn it around in 3 or 4 weeks. I have somebody I'm working with now. She's going to be on spring break in March. And so it's like, well, I guess you have to March to get it done. I mean, she is done already, but she had till then to complete it, because we need to have time together, 3 to 4 hours. So it's very dependent upon what that person's needs are. And then there's people like, oh my goodness, you know that they're going to write an autobiography and they're going to need like half a year. And I don't see that that is very beneficial. I think that's just staying in the problem and not the solution.
Yeah, you know he's bad.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this. You mentioned when you were doing this that you asked them if they are going to do their fifth step with you.
Mm-hmm.
When they say, I'm going to do it with whomever, how do you deal with that? Then how do you do a sixth and seventh step with them?
I've never had that problem. So,
okay.
But I would advise them. I would advise them, for one, I would ask why.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, if that other person is a recovering alcoholic, and I know that folks do understand, you know, somebody in the church, you know, a pastor or somebody might or might not understand the depths of what we're doing.
So how do you deal with that when they say, well, I'm going to do it with my pastor?
I guess I would first ask why.
Okay.
Why is our relationship such that that is problematic for you? And, you know, is it a character defect that is preventing this woman from wanting to share? Is it fear? You know, and start discussing, like, what are you afraid of, you know? Because I found that my first trusting relationship in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous was with my sponsor. That relationship back and forth allowed me to form, because I wasn't very trusting, because there were things that I was wronged, and I wronged a lot of people. So building that, by the time that I was on my fourth step, I had that relationship enough to proceed. So it would be confusing to me, but I get it. And I think, you know, our book talks about, you know, back then there weren't enough sponsors.
Yeah.
You know, it was a whole different era. It would be caution, and if they wanted to do that, I would definitely make sure that they understood what they were undertaking, that the person understood what they were providing and taking their fourth step.
So would you ask them to bring, you know, if they decided to do it with a minister mm-hmm. or a priest or something mm-hmm. and said, well, I don't want to do it with you, but
mm-hmm.
I want to do it with them,
mm-hmm.
would you ask them to, like, bring, you know, maybe assets and defects back to you so you could deal with the sixth mm-hmm. step? Or?
Well, I never really thought, again, because I've never been in that situation. I don't know. I don't know about how to proceed past that, and maybe those steps would also be managed by the person that heard the fifth step. I don't know. I'm sure it's happened though, right? Yeah. Anybody here do that? I should have them come up. Anybody do their fist, their fist step with a person other than their sponsor? You did.
Second time.
And what were your reasons?
I relapsed the first time, so I heard someone do a lead talk about how they did it with a priest, and they said, I'm not very religious, but My sponsor hooked me up with someone in the program who hooked me up with a priest who does that.
Yes, and that would be much more comforting to me to know that this particular priest or pastor is familiar with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that's the key thing is do they understand, you know, it's not a confession. It's completely different in my eyes. I confessed all over the place. What good did that do, right? Yeah, and did you do your 6 and 7 with the priest?
Nope.
You, okay. Mm-hmm. Cool, see? I like that. Just switch, I'll just sit down.
There you go.